is up, everybody? This is episode 6 of the Christian Zookeeper. I am your host, Tyler Stinchcombe, and we got a good one today. This is the conservation episode. So what you hear today is a conversation I had with my fiance just about conservation in zoos. So I'm so excited for you guys to hear the conversation we had and just to meet my fiance for the first time. I'm pretty sure this is going to be the first time she's on this podcast. So let's go. Enjoy. And I will talk to you at the end. Let's go. Everybody, this is my fiance, Andrea Marie, soon to be Stinchcombe.
Hello.
I'm really excited to have her on this conservation episode. So the goal of today is really to communicate, and also dropping my phone in the process, is really just to communicate to everybody what conservation zoos do, because I feel like that's one thing of zoos that most people just don't think about, because you see the entertainment aspect, you see the education aspect, you can hear about some of the research that zoos do, but conservation sometimes gets under the radar. However, zoos are doing, some zoos are doing a really good job of speaking up about what they're doing, having signs about, like, we're fundraising for this thing, or we're doing this, or we're sending people out in the wild to do this, or they're being more vocal, but it's still something that I don't think a lot of the general public know about conservation. So I'm curious, before you started dating me and knowing about zoos, did you have a full, did you know really what zoos were doing more than just holding animals? Like, did you know some of the conservation aspects?
I don't think I knew them related to zoos. Because I don't know, I feel like everyone's heard about Ellen and her gorillas.
Yeah.
Jane Goodall
and DeGeneres.
Yeah, okay. But I don't think I knew related to zoos that zoos, like, directly put out conservation and conservation work, as well as just having animals to look at.
Yeah, there's so much more that they do. So, everyone, I don't think I said it up front, but I'm having Andrea on this podcast just to be my co-host, because she's my favorite person to talk to in the entire world. So I'm just really excited to just kind of bounce some of my ideas off of her and see her thoughts and question her and grill her on the spot with everything recorded.
Yep, no preparation, guys.
So for conservation, I think what I want to highlight is, like, what zoos' main things that they do, which things I've spoken at schools and stuff for, is, like, they're big into research, breeding, their fundraising, and then education. And all that can be kind of broken up into two different sections that we just, like, talked about a little bit too, with their kind of big science-y terms, but in situ conservation efforts and then ex situ conservation efforts. So the in situ is going to be in the environment of where the animal is found. So, like, Snow Leopard Trust is a organization that works with snow leopards in Mongolia and in China, where snow leopards are actually found, and they're working on the grounds to tag snow leopards and track them and work with the communities. Like, that stuff is super sweet. And so zoos will, like, fundraise for that. And then there's ex situ conservation, which is out of the environment. And that is that's where zoos are going to be doing more hands-on things for conservation, which is where their education comes into an aspect, or, like, breeding is a really big one, which I hope we can get into, because that's one that as a zookeeper we can actually help with, and actually help with the breeding of really endangered animals. And I mentioned it with a podcast with Ezra of just how many animals have gone, like, extinct in the wild, but zoos have brought back. And that just super excited me, getting into zoos and knowing that there is more than just holding animals as an entertainment value, but also, like, we're having, like, a safe bank of animals in case something goes extinct. We can release golden lion tamers back in the wild because we have a sturdy population in zoos, and we can start a rehabilitation process. Yeah. I'm here for an interruption. I want to talk about golden lion tamers. I like in the podcast that I brought it up for an example, and they really are, like, like one of the best examples of a zoo reintroducing a species that was almost extinct in the wild. And there's been several really famous cases, and I don't remember if I said it in the podcast, but like Przewalski's horse, black-footed cats, California condors, Arabian oryx, scimitar horned oryx, just to name a few different species that zoos have been critical to breeding them in zoos and then reintroducing zoo-bred populations and genetics into the wild to bring a species that was extinct or very endangered back to positive numbers, which is so cool. So, golden lion tamarins. I'm looking at savethelionTamarin.org. It is a organization that was really like steamrolled or like head, I don't know what the word I'm looking for, but it's really like head started by the Smithsonian National Institute and the National Zoo. So in the 1960s, scientists believe that there was around like 200 golden lion tamarins left in the wild, which is not a lot at all, right? And then looking at their timeline here, in 1972, scientists from around the world met at the National Zoo in Washington, D.C. to plan how to save golden lion tamarins. There was a reserve created in 1974, and then in 1980, the golden lion tamarin population climbs to 500 and 150 zoos worldwide. So, looking on this website, there is a ton of zoos that started breeding golden lion tamarins, and all the zoos are listed on here. And I know just from schools talking about this. Very famous example is like so many zoos when they knew that oh this species needs to be saved, they jumped on that train like oh let's make a exhibit, let's breed golden lion tamarins. And it was the big fad for a lot of AZA zoos was to let's start breeding golden lion tamarins. And then in 1983, back to the timeline here, the Golden Lion Tamarin Conservation Program began in Brazil where there was the forest that they're trying to reintroduce these guys back into. Then in 1984 to 2000, reintroduction of 146 zoo-born golden lion tamarins in Brazil started, and the descendants thrived. And then there was, let's see, a couple other dates here that are really cool. In 2003, the IUCN status for golden lion tamarins is upgraded from critically endangered to endangered. Another reserve was created in 1998. Let's see. There was, oh, 2014, a AMLD field census estimated 3,700 golden lion tamarins in the wild, which is so insane. So that was 2014, and just in like the 1960s, there was 200. That's just the power of zoos. So I love golden lion tamarins. I think they're a really cool species. I love how saving them have saved an entire rainforest. And there's more on that. Just look up golden lion tamarins. You can just see the importance of kind of focusing on one species and in turn, like how protecting one species, you actually protect a whole bunch of species because making a reserve that is intended for golden lion tamarins is also reserved for hundreds and potentially thousands of different species, especially for a rainforest when biodiversity is so intense. So super cool. Yeah, if you have any more questions about golden lion tamarins, like I encourage you to do some research and look it up. And also just send me questions too if you have more. All right, back to the episode.
So the breeding programs that, like I mentioned, it's like SSPs have ever been the really big thing for AZA Zoo. So those are like species survival plans. You probably heard me say a lot of things about them. I work with a lot of animals right now that are involved in SSPs. And SSPs are basically just tinder for animals of different, like stud book. Or people will, there's like one individual that runs like a stud book, and then they will kind of pick what individuals in that species should breed to make the best offspring, and that has like made the genetics of so many zoo species more stable when we know who's parent to who, because before it was just a genetic mess. Do you have any questions or clarity that you would like from a zookeeper's perspective about breeding or conservation?
For those that may not know terminology, what is a stud book?
Yeah, okay, so stud books are just like. Just like the genealogy of like whose parents are who or whose kids or whose parents. I don't know if that makes sense. It's like the genealogy tree that like you'll see in like middle school or whatever, where you have your parents or and then their grandparents and then their great great grandparents and then their great 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 grandparents and then where you fall along in that tree. That's where basically a stud book is, but it's for animals and for like how you can get all the animals related and kind of go back down to one or a few zoo animals. So that's another thing, like zoos don't take from the wild anymore, at least for most things. Sometimes like herps and aquatics is a different conversation, but for the most part mammals zoos do not take from the wild, and we just any mammal that you see in a zoo is most likely bred in a zoo unless it was like a rescue or a like a confiscation animal from the government. Those are really the three main ways that you would get a mammal in. Zoos don't take from the wild anymore. And because of that, we're just going to be breeding animals that can stay in a zoo setting and be healthy. So that means that there needs to be a genetically viable, really healthy population, which is why stud books are so important, because we don't take from the wild. But then those species that like were from the wild, so like even so there's some reptile species that I know of that were like wild caught, and their genetics are really important. Or like there's some like chimps that are like the kids of a wild caught chimp, and those kids are really valuable because their parents are like not represented well in zoos and have genetics that are really important to a zoo population that has chimps that have been in captivity for decades, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, cool. So, yeah, that's a little bit on breeding, like SSPs. And then other things I guess I wanted to touch on is just like when you spend your money at a zoo, you're really paying for all the conservation efforts that zoos are doing. And again, not every zoo is doing a bunch of conservation efforts. But like AZA zoos have to an extent, do some sort of conservation. And so some things they don't say a lot about what they're doing, but like amphibian conservation is a big one, and kind of like I feel like it's kind of easy for some zoos to jump into of breeding frogs, because you can just set up a tank and let them breed, and then boom, you can send 300 tadpoles to Puerto Rico to be released, and they're easier to release. So tadpoles you can just raise in a tank and throw fruit flies, and those frogs can actually survive well in the wild compared to like a cheetah that you raise in a zoo and then you put it out in the wild and then it gets destroyed in its first day. What is your favorite animal, by the way? Just so everyone can know.
Bottlenose dolphin.
Okay, why?
They're the best.
Okay, you have to elaborate.
They've just always been my favorite. I like the ocean, you know. They're a mermaid's best friend. You gotta love the mermaids. And they're super fast and playful and so smart.
Yeah, they're
And I
okay.
hope to be best friends with one someday.
Okay, you will. So, I want to use dolphins then as an example. So, for dolphin conservation, that's pretty difficult because they live in like everywhere. Like, water is like all over the planet. But there's a lot of really cool organizations that do like dolphin tracking. And I don't actually know a ton about dolphin conservation because they haven't been one of my favorite animals. But I know we just like paid for a little thing that kind of went towards dolphin conservation, and like I know a lot of zoos that are involved in dolphin conservation, which is really cool. And even like aquariums, like the Georgia Aquarium, on their TV show they send out like aquarists that go onto boats and help track dolphins. And even just SSPs and breeding dolphins in captivity is or in zoos is beneficial to those out in the wild. Yo, another quick interruption, but I totally forgot about this conservation organization, but I learned about it through my master's work, and I had to think about dolphin research for a minute until I remembered this one. But it is the Sarasota Dolphin Research Program, and it's by Chicago's Zoological Society, really, or mainly Brookfield Zoo. And also, it's like Brookfield Zoo and the Shedd Aquarium are really big into this, and it's just a cool example of a zoo and an aquarium and different zoological institutions coming together to support research programs and things out in the wild for animals that they have in their collection. So, looking at their website right now, it's actually on the Brookfield Zoo website. It's like a sister site is the Sarasota Dolphin Research Program, and it says it's the world's largest running study of a wild dolphin population, focusing on many aspects of dolphin biology, including health, behavior, genetics, environmental change, and adverse interactions with humans. From what I talked to from a scientist during one of the school like programs I had over the summer, was that it is an awesome program that they are doing out in the wild and doing research or for dolphins. And it's really cool. It's a, yeah, just an example of zoos using their resources for good, for research. It's cool. All right, back to the episode.
Oh, so some of the research that I've done. When I was at a zoo in Iowa, we got to help with the Snow Leopard Trust with their snow leopards. So the research study that we were doing was helping their biologists identify snow leopards from trail cams. So we actually used trail cams in our exhibit for snow leopards and took pictures of the snow leopards. And then we would send those snow leopards in with to the Snow Leopard Trust, and they would kind of like quiz their biologist to make sure they are still good at identifying snow leopards. And they would add a bunch of pictures of snow leopards that are out in the wild that they know, like the individual, like they know, oh, this is Peter, he's out in the wild, we study him, we know, oh, this is Angelina, we know her. And then we throw in some of the snow leopards I worked with, like Nico and stuff, individuals they've never seen, and see if that throws them off of identifying if they can pick out that that's a new individual or not. Which is really cool study and awesome that the Snow Leopard Trust was like asking for zoos for help because they want to keep bettering themselves. And that's like what excited me to get involved in helping. Like my zoo currently set up things with the Snow Leopard Trust. I'm helping with fundraising for them because they're just such an awesome organization. And so that's like a little like kind of research project, but I've also seen other studies where we'll send in, and some of the studies that zoos do for research are like the grosser parts of research. Like we'll send out like necropsies, like animals that have passed, we'll send to universities so then they can do research on the animal's body. Or we can do, I've done helped with like fecal studies where you'll take a fecal sample of your animal and then,
That's poop for those of you that
yeah,
don't
yes, thank you.
know.
And we'll send that in to whoever wants to catalog and look at animal poop for whatever reason. And I've seen like digestive stuff. I know polar bear research, they're doing cool things in zoos that I've seen on like all the zoo shows. So it's cool because, yeah, zoos have such a bunch, like a ton of animals to pull from for different research, which is cool. But this, yeah, snow leopards and like fecal studies have been the only ones that I've been involved with in zoos for now.
We got to explore owl pellets in third grade.
Oh, heck yeah.
I found a very large tooth in mine.
I think I found like a shrew.
I think I found part of a shrew-like skull with a giant tooth in it.
Did you wear gloves for yours, or did you like touch the owl pellet bare hands?
I mean, I would hope I would have worn gloves, but I don't remember.
Yeah, I don't remember either.
I think.
Do they just let kids just straight up touch them? Maybe
I
I mean,
think
you wash
you
your
have
hands
to wear a
after.
glove. I
Do
don't
you?
know.
It's not like it's poop, because it's what they cough up, right? That's an
Yeah,
owl
but
pellet.
it's
Yeah.
still bodily fluids.
Okay.
Any third graders out
Yeah,
there?
right.
If you wear gloves or not? You got any good success stories?
Success stories? I mean, for me, any like introduction is really exciting. Like successful introduction. So what I mean by introduction, for those that don't know, are when you take an animal from another institution or even another group that hasn't been with an animal, with another animal, and you're trying to get them to cohabitate and be happy together. Which those can be really challenging, especially with the animals that I work with, which are typically primates or big cats. That can be very challenging because primates are so
social and so complex with their social structures that you have to be very careful with how you go about the introduction process because you could lose an animal because they and monkeys just fight all the time in zoo or in the wild, and they do fight in zoos, but you have the problem of four walls and a ceiling in a zoo, so you they don't necessarily have the escape routes that they would in the wild. So it's very, very slow process, but I think my most memorable and most like impactful success story was the Colobus monkey named Kenna. Shout out, she's still making babies. But she was like she started when I first started as my full-time keeper, and then she kind of came over and like I really had a big connection with her. And then, which I've talked about in other episodes, but just her blending into the troop meant a lot to me. And like she went through a lot, lots of fights, but then got to the point where she started making babies, and like now has contributed to that troop with two babies, so that's awesome. And then seeing like I've been a part of a mer leopard, actually that might be my favorite success. I think Kenna was the most impactful one, but I totally forgot about Jilin and Iona, because they're a mer leopards, if anyone doesn't know, is like the most endangered big cat species. There's like so not many of them in the wild, and I'm actually going to do a Google search real quick to inform y'all about mer leopards because they're critically endangered in the east side of Russia. Usha. Let's see if the Wi-Fi will work. It's going to take a minute, but I got to work with two. I worked with one boy, he was adorable, Jalen, and then we brought in a female from Great Britain. Oh, in 2021, it was reported the population was about 110 individuals in the wild. That's insane.
That's crazy.
So, getting to work with two of them was so fun and so crazy and such an honor. And then getting to put them together, and yeah, they fought their cats, but they eventually got to the point where they tolerated each other. And then they got to the point where Ionia was in heat and was a completely different cat, and Jilin was like, let's go. And then she gave birth to two cubs that are still doing great. And just insane to like know that like I helped increase that population by two.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was so fun. Yeah, those and mer leopards because of that became one of my like favorite animals, like top 10 for sure. And I would love to work with mer leopards again and snow leopards. Any leopard. All right, y'all. That is the episode. That was episode 6. I hope you guys enjoyed it. This was kind of a different flow, a different episode from most of mine. I think so far that where I've kind of focused on faith or zookeeping, that this is just more conservation. But I wanted to educate anybody out there that is not a zookeeper or is not familiar much with zoos of just hopefully educating you guys a little bit of why zoos are so important and why I love them so much. So that's the episode. Next week is going to be a good one. Next week is going to be the last episode, the finale, and I have Andrea on again, and it's an awesome conversation. I'm really excited for you guys to hear that one. So you guys have an awesome week. See ya.